Okay, so we're holding on Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph, third line. We're still discussing the dinim of Shmita, which we got into that, of course, by talking about how they affect the Esrog and possibly the Lulav as well. In that sugya, we had a machlokas, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, when it comes to transferring the kedusha of from Peiros Shvius onto something else, what are the methods that you can do it? So by hektish, there are two ways of doing it. They're called derech mekach and derech chivul. A derech mekach is when you sell it, and derech chivul is when you make the exchange with your own thing. You say this is instead of that. This is mechulal on that. Now by shmita fruit, to be exact, we said that it's different than hektish because the original item keeps its kedusha, unlike by hektish where it gives it up to whatever you're trading it for. Anyway, though, we had Rabbi Elazar saying that when it comes to Peiros Shvius, the only valid way to do it is derech mekach, is by buying and selling, not derech chilu. And then Rabbi Yechanan had said that it works either way, derech mekach or derech chilu. So now, continuing on analyzing that machlokas, Amar Rav Ashi, machlokas with Kri Rishon. That machlokas, Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Elazar, is by the original fruit. So you have grapes of Shemitah, for example. You want to be matpis something else with the kedusha of it. You're going to be selling or trading or whatever these grapes for something else. And we said yesterday that something else is also going to have kedusha shvius. So Rabbi Elazar would say that the only valid way to do that with the original pri is derech mekach, not derech chilul. According to him, derech chilul, nothing would happen. The grapes still would have kedusha shvius, that they would have either way, but whatever it is that you exchange them for, the money, for example, would not have kedusha shvius. Whereas according to the Yechanan, it would work that way as well. Avul the pri sheni, but Rav Ashi says, when it comes to the second pri, let's say you previously had exchanged the grapes to give the example that we had in the Gemara yesterday, you would exchange the grapes for meat. So now if you want to exchange that meat for something else, where now the meat is actually going to lose its kedusha, and the kedusha is going to be transferred, kedusha shvius is going to be transferred onto the next item in the chain, then divrei hakol ben derech mekach ben derech chilul. Then everybody would agree that derech mekach or derech chilul would work, either one of them. And so you could do it by selling the meat to somebody else, and you could also do it by exchanging the meat for something else that you have in your own refrigerator or whatever. Now we had the braisa yesterday that explained how this whole thing of chilul of Peiros Shvius works, how it works, how the kedusha gets transferred from one item to another, and we said that the original item always retains kedusha, and the last item in the chain has kedusha. So and each time we said lokach the Peiros Basar, lokach the Basar Dogim, etc., etc. So why does it use the expression lokach each time if we're saying that from the second time and on you would be allowed to do it derech chilul? It's just Rav Ashi says, since the first part of the braisa says lokach, and we said that braisa is according to Rabbi Elazar, that the first time around that has to be done using lokicha, using buying and selling, tonanami say for lokach, so it continues with the rest of the chain with lokach. But in fact, even Rabbi Elazar and the Tana of that braisa says Rav Ashi would say that from the second item onward, you're allowed to do it derech chilul as well. However, Esvei Ravina l'Rav Ashi, Ravina says to Rav Ashi, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, Mi sheyesh lo sela shel shvius, suppose a person has a coin, a sela coin of Shmita money, so he had grapes or what have you of Shmita, and he sold them to somebody else and got a sela in return, where we said that now that sela has kedusha shvius. Now, one of the rules of kedusha shvius we said is you can only use it for food. You can't use it for other kinds of things. We said food has a broader meaning. Fine, it means other things that are basic necessities. For example, we talked about for example firewood and other such purposes. smearing on your skin, etc. But one of the rules is that it has to be something that is, it has to be something that that's being used up as it's being used. As we said yesterday, So now, so part of that, therefore, is, let's say, you can't let's say, buy clothing with it. Rashi points out that would the pasuk says ochla, which implies that you have to have something that you're able to use up within the time, before the time of beer, whereas a shirt is going to last for, is going to last beyond that time. So you can't buy a shirt, let's say, with Shmita money. But let's say you have Shmita money and you want to use it, and you want to use it to buy a shirt. Or Bikish Likach by Cholo. He wants to buy a shirt with it. Kate said Yasa. So what should he do in order not to violate the dinim of Shmita? He can go to a storekeeper who is a regular customer by. Now, of course, it's not particularly important for the din that he's a regular customer by this guy. The reason we're mentioning that, Rashi says, is because practically speaking, that's the kind of person who is going to do what you ask him to do. So now the customer says to the storekeeper, I'm giving you the seller as a present. And I skipped a couple of lines. The customer says, I have a seller, give me a seller's worth of fruit. So now he gives him. So now what happens is the seller has lost its kedusha shvius, and the fruit has now gained kedusha shvius, the fruit that he just bought. So he gives it to him. Then the customer says, the peiros now I'm giving you as a gift. And now the storekeeper says, okay, well then in return, not in return, but whatever, fine. I'm giving you the seller as a present. And then he can do with them whatever he wants, because now the fruit has kedushas shvius, and the storekeeper is going to have to eat it with kedushas shvius. But the money has already been the kedusha has been transferred off it onto the fruit. So now he has a seller back, and now he can go to another store and buy a shirt. So now the point is, says Ravina, v'ha'hacha the pre-sheni. Now let's consider, in this case, you're talking pre-sheni, because over here, the money is already not the original, the money is obviously not the original thing of Shmita. It's money that you got for something else, for grapes or what have you of Shmita. And even then, we see that he needs to do it derech mekach. He needs to go to a storekeeper who he's a regular customer by and get the storekeeper to participate in this. If it was allowed, derech chilul, the second from the second item, beginning from pre-sheni and onward, then you wouldn't need that whole elaborate thing. All you'd need to do is you take the seller, you take some fruit that you have yourself. That's left over from before Shmita, and you say, I'm exchanging this money for this fruit, and the money now loses its kedusha, and the fruit you eat with kedusha shvius. The fact that the Braisa doesn't say that you can do that, and instead says that you have to go to the storekeeper and do the whole thing derech mekach, etc., goes to show that that's the only valid way of doing it. Even at least there's an opinion that that's the only valid way of doing it, even by pre-Sheni and onward. So what are you telling me that even Rabbi Lazar is going to allow by pre-Sheni and onward to do derech chilul? We see from this braisa that not. So v'ha'hacha the pre-Sheni, here it's the second pre, because tadi derech mekach ein derech chilul loy. And you still see it only works derech mekach, not derech chilul. So therefore, so that contradicts what Rav Ashi said. El omer Rav Ashi, so you're right, Rav Ashi changed his mind and said, rather, here's how it works. The other way around, machloikas v'pri-sheni, the machloikas of Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yechanan would be dafka as far as the second pre. So there you have, Rabbi Lazar will say that even by the second pre, you have to do derech mekach, and Rabbi Yechanan will say then you can do it derech chilul. Avon, the pre-rishon, but when it comes to the original fruit of Shmita, divrei hakol, everybody is going to agree that you can only do it derech mekach. So therefore, so a few lines ago, we asked in that case, why does the original, why does the Braisa that we quoted on Mem Amud Beis use the expression lokach throughout? So now we know it had to use the word lokach the first time. It's not just the coin of Elazar. Rabbi Yochanan might also, that Braisa would work according to Rabbi Yochanan as well. The first time it has to say lokach. After that, it continues to use the word lokach for consistency's sake. But the first time around, definitely it has to be lokach. After that, you have two different opinions: whether derech mekach works, or whether only derech mekach works, or whether derech chilul works as well. The braisa that we just quoted about the guy who wants to buy a shirt would be, according to the opinion, that every time you can only do derech mekach and you can never do derech chilul. And furthermore, says Rav Ashi, according to that. Now, one of the braises that we quoted yesterday said that we quoted a braise yesterday that was in support of Rabbi Yochanan that said that both shvius and ma'aser sheni can be the things can be done derech chilul. So now v'hod katani echad shvius ve'echad ma'aser sheni. So now when it said in that braise shvius or ma'aser sheni, the rule is that you can do chilul. Necessarily, we have to say my shvius d'mei shvius. Necessarily, the word shvius there must mean not the original fruit of shvius, but rather the money that you got for selling or trading fruits of shmita. And therefore, that's what it's saying, that you can do derech chilul, but not the original pre, even Rabbi Yochanan would agree you can't. And we know that, actually, the Eloi Temahachi, after all, if you weren't going to say like that, if you were going to think that shvius there means the original fruit of shvius, well then maiser mamish. So would maiser mean that you're talking about trading the actual fruit of maiser itself? Obviously not. The pasuk says that you exchange. How do you machal maiser shady? You're not machal. The braisa had described how you can be. The braisa had talked about to be machal maiser shady on animals, b'schalden abahem chayev ha'oif ben chayin ben shchotin. But obviously, you're not mechalo the ma'aser sheni fruit directly on animals, whether live or shechted. You transfer them to money, and then you take the money to your shalayim and you use it to buy food. So it can't be that. So that braisa can't be referring to the ma'aser itself. Because after all, the pasuk says you should bind up the money in your hand, and we learn from the word vitsauta that it means not only to bundle it up. It also is maloshin surah that you have to use a coin that you have to use dafka coins that have an image on them that have an image like a goyish image or what have you, but at least that they have some kind of devices coin some kind of inscription or whatever coined on them. So you have to use money. You can't directly transfer the kedusha of ma'aser sheni onto meat or onto some other kind of food. Necessarily, therefore, we have to be talking about money rather than which is already pre-sheni rather than the original fruit. So ela d'mei ma'aser. Necessarily, therefore, we have to be talking about the money of ma'aser. Hochanami d'mei shvius. The same way the braisa when it was talking about doing chilul was talking about d'mei shvius, but not the original fruit of Shmita itself, though that you would have to do derech mekach. Fine. So the maskana is okay. So that's the bottom line. We have this machlokas Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, and now we understand that the machlokas is not about the first time that you're doing. The machlokas is only from the second time and on. Now, when we have a machlokas Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, generally the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. That's how it is over here. Therefore, the first time it has to be derech mekach. The first time it has to be derech mekach when it comes to peidus shvius. After that, it can be derech chilul if you want. Next, the Mishnah says, "Barishona haya lulav nitol b'mikdash shiva." Originally, the lulav was taken in the mikdash for only for all 7 days. Rashi brings from Torah Skarin. The pasuk says, which means only the first day, but then it continues, you should rejoice in front of Hashem for 7 days. So we learn from that. Means dafke in the Beis Hamikdash, where Hashem's presence is most openly revealed. So then you have to take lulav and esrog for 7 days. And everywhere else you would take it for 1 day. Rashi over here and in a few other places in Shas explains that Medina means every place else outside the Beis Hamikdash, including the city of Yerushalayim itself. So even in the city of Yerushalayim, according to Rashi, you would be taking it only on the 1 day before the Takana that we're going to talk about. On the other hand, the Rambam learns that Mikdash includes the whole city of Yerushalayim, and Medina means everywhere else. So anyway, that was how it was originally. Mishachara Beis HaMikdash, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Hiskin Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made a takana, she had lulav nito, but Medina shiva zeichel mikdash, that we should take the lulav everywhere else outside the Beis HaMikdash, according to Rashi, outside Yerushalayim, according to the Rambam, that everywhere we should take the lulav for 7 days, during Sukkot, Zeichel HaMikdash, as a remembrance of the Beis HaMikdash. So it comes out, now we learned earlier in the Perek, therefore, it comes out that the rest of the days of Sukkot, when you take Lulav and Esrog, is Drabban. Only the first day is Daraisa. Okay, it brings in Shulchan Aruch that the second day outside Eretz Yisrael, given that it's Sveika B'Yom, given that officially it could have been the first day, then therefore the dinim that apply on the first day also apply to it. For example, Lachem, for example, the fact that the lulav has to belong to you, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, that you can't borrow somebody else's lulav, that would apply on the second day as well. But the rest of the days, Kol HaMoed is only Dirabanan, and therefore the dinim and the dinim of Lachem don't apply. And certain other dinim, and in Shulchan Aruch, it brings that there are certain kinds of psulim that maybe only apply primarily when the lulav is Daraisa and not the rest of the days when it's Dirabanan. Okay, so that was one takana of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. Also, another takana of his, v'shiyehe yom henef kuloi osur. Also, he made a takana that the whole day on which the omer is waved should be osur still to eat chodesh. Meaning, as the Gemara is going to explain, until you bring the korban omer, you're not allowed to eat chodesh, you're not allowed to eat the new crop of grain that grew that year. Grew for this purpose is defined as that it took root in the ground any time before the omer was brought. So the Torah tells us, you're not allowed to eat the new grain until the korban omer is brought. So there's a big machloikus, by the way, which ultimately goes all the way back to a machloikus tanoim, whether it applies outside Eretz Yisrael. The fact that we don't keep Chadosh in general outside of Eretz Yisrael is based on the Shitta that it doesn't apply, which is the Shitta of the Bach, but this isn't really the place to get into it. The point is definitely in Eretz Yisrael, the concept of Chadosh applies. So until the Korban Omer is brought, now that there's no more Korban Omer, so Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made a takana for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara, that Chadosh remains Osir the entire 16th of Nisan. And it becomes mutter only the morning of the 17th. For Bnei Chutzlar, it's actually, again, because of Steak of Yoma, it remains also the 17th, and it becomes mutter only the morning of the 18th. Okay, now why are we mentioning Davka, the second Takana of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai? Tosfos points out that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us of 9 Takanas, of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. The reason is, so Tosfos just says, because once we're mentioning the Takana about the Lulav, then also we mentioned, by the way, the Takana about Yom Henef. So Tosfos doesn't explain what one has to do with the other, that we should mention it, by the way. So I saw, and then Dodo sort of showed him, has an explanation of it. He says, what happened? The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. So comes before Sukkot the following year, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai makes the takana about that they should take the lulav of Shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. And while he's at it, while he's sending letters to Jews all over the world informing them of that new takana, by the way, he also takes the opportunity to mention to them, you should know also that 6 months from now is going to be Pesach and the rules of Chodesh are going to be different. So that's why the Mishnah puts them together, because Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai actually published them at the same time. So the Gemara asks, How do we know that you're supposed to make a zecher for the mikdash? That we're saying that you take the lulav for 7 days as a remembrance of the bais mikdash. Where do we see that that's an important thing to do? Amar Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Yechanan says, "De'omakra, you have a pasuk in Yirmiyah. You have a nevuah of Nechama in Sefer Yirmiyah. Most of Sefer Yirmiyah is nevuahs about the Churban, but there are several chapters back to back over there where he has nevuahs of great Nechama. One of them we read is the Haftarah." Or the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Anyway, so one of them is, he says that the pasuk says ki ala arucha loch. The pasuk says Hashem says I will raise up, meaning I will cause a healing for you. Umimakisayich erporich, and I will heal you from your wounds. Um Hashem, so says Hashem, ki nidocha karuloch, because they. The nations of the world and have called you the one who was pushed away, like the one who like that's it. There was a churban and chas v'shalom. They're claiming there's never going to be a gula. So they've called you that. Tzion he derdish ein la. She is Tzion. There is nobody who is seeking her out. There's nobody who's looking out for her. So therefore, so Miklal the Boya Drisha. So we see from the implication of this pasuk that we do need Drisha. We need people to be looking out and looking forward to the Beis Mikdash being built. And therefore, we have so in other words, the Mitzudas David on the pasuk explains. In other words, the Goyim are thinking like that's it. There's no future hope for Yerushalayim. Hashem is saying it's not like that. I'm going to seek out Yerushalayim and heal it. But the Gemara is saying that we Jewish people also need to seek out and remember Tzion and remember the Churban, and therefore we need mitzvahs that are zeicha the mikdash. An interesting point, by the way, is that we don't say unlike by Sfira Sa'oma, we say Harachman who yachzov on avodas beis mikdash from koma. We don't say it's an interesting point that we don't say that after taking lulav and esrog. So the Tosfos elsewhere in Megillah that says because at least we're doing something. Sfiras Omer, all we're doing is mentioning the Omer. We're not even bringing anything as a zecher for the Omer. So therefore, we ask that the avoda should be brought back. Here, at least we are physically taking the lulav and esrog. So therefore, there's no need to do it. But that is the idea that when we take lulav and esrog, the rest of the days we should have in mind that we're doing it as zecher l'mikdash. An interesting point about this, by the way, the Zohar brings a different pasuk that has the word that has this word Allah or error that has the word Allah in it. Imlay Allah Yerushalayim Arish Simchasi, and explained that the word Allah is an acronym for the four minim Esrog Arava Lulav Hadas. So here the Gemara is bringing a different pasuk with the word Eelah Ki Eelah Aruch Aloch. It's the same letters, and in fact, the Reuven Margolius and a couple of his Sfarim brings a drasha from various sources that's why Dafka over here, the Gemara, brings this pasuk in connection with that. We're saying that you have various things that are done zeicha l'mikdash. Why Dafka over here? Does the Gemara bring that pasuk? That's why, because the word e'ele, as in ki e'ele aruch aloch, is a remez to the Dalad Minim, because it's an acronym for their names. Next, we said in the mission of a Shehei Yom Hanef that the day of waving, that it's the whole 16th of Nisan, it should be also to eat Chodosh, was the second takana of Rabbi Yechiman Zakkai. So my timer, the Gemara says, why? So because Meheri Yibona Beis Mikdash, very soon we can expect that the Beis Mikdash will be built. The Yomru, and people are going to think to themselves, Ashtakad Milo Yachalnu Bahoyu Mizrach, last year, now like this, the Gemara is assuming. And the Gemara is assuming that when there's no Korban Omer, then as the Gemara is going to say in a second, then as soon as it midaraisa, as soon as the morning of the 16th of Nisan comes, right away you would be then you would right away be allowed to, then right away you would be allowed to eat chodesh. The assumption is that when there's a Korban Omer, then you have to wait till it's brought. But when not, then you could eat the first thing that morning already of the 16th of Nisan, or the 17th if you're in the Chutz La'aretz. So now what happens is, though, when the Beis Mikdash is built, the Yomru, people are going to say to themselves, Eshtakad, last year, didn't we eat Chodesh as soon as it became light in the sky on the 16th of Nisan? Hashd Nami Nechel. They're going to think now that this Mikdash has been built, also we can eat Chodesh right away on the morning of the 16th. The Inu Lo Yadi, and they're not going to realize the distinction. Last year there was no Bis Mikdash, therefore, as soon as it became light, you were allowed to eat Chodesh. Whereas now there is a Bis Mikdash, then you need to wait for the Omer to be brought in order to eat Chodesh, and people are not going to realize it, and they're going to start eating Chodesh a few hours early. So because of that, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai made this takana that you can't eat it for the whole day. In fact, Tosfos points out, theoretically, we could bring the korban even when there's no Bis Mikdash. However, there does have to be a Mizbeach. And nowadays, we don't have a Mizbeach either. So therefore, practically speaking, we can't bring the korban omer. That point, by the way, that short point of Tosfos became quite controversial. There were various Rishonim who disagreed with that and said that, after all, you are allowed to bring korbanos even when the Mizbeach is not built. Famously, Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris, one of the later Balei Tosfos, came to Eretz Yisrael. He moved to Eretz Yisrael in the year Hei Alafim Yud Zayin, 5017, corresponding to 1257, and he wanted to bring a Korban Pesach, even though, of course, there's no Beis Mikdash and no Mizbeach. And it became a whole controversy between him and other Chachamim of that time, whether he would, in fact, be allowed in principle to bring a Korban Pesach. And that issue has resurfaced here and there over the hundreds of years. Anyway, but Tosfos over here is saying that you can't bring the Omer when there's no Mizbeach. But practically speaking, they're not bringing the Omer anyway. So therefore, the point is, though, that people are not going to realize, people are going to think that you might be able to eat Chodesh first thing in the morning. However, the Gemara asks, in that case, then we're saying that he asked it all day, but why all day? The Ivni Amos, we have to consider, when are we talking about that the Bais HaMikdash might be rebuilt such that we would have reason to be concerned? Ilema de Ivni Beshitzar, are we talking about that the Bais HaMikdash is built only on the morning of the 16th? Well then, no problem. Hare Hitzur Hei Mizra. As soon as it became light that morning already, the Bais HaMikdash had not been built yet. Therefore, you were allowed to eat Chodesh. It doesn't now become also again because there was no Korban Omer. So what's the problem? There's no reason to make a gzera for that contingency. Elad Ivni b'chamesar. So are we talking about that it was built on the 15th of Nisan, which is the first day of Yom Tov, or any time earlier? Doesn't dafka mean on the 15th? It just means sometime before the 16th of Nisan. Well, then, what's the problem? Why do we need to aso the entire day to be able to? Why do we need to aso Chodesh the entire day? It should be enough to aso it until Chatzos. It should be mutter from Chatzoy Sayyim and onward. Dotnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Menachos. People who are far away from Yerushalayim and don't know exactly when the Korban Omer was brought, they're allowed to eat Chodesh in the time of the Bais Mikdash from Chatzoy Sayyim and onward. Lafisha ain't based in Misatzim boy, because Basedin is not going to be lazy with it. In other words, they know for sure Basedin is going to make sure that the Korban Omer is brought no later than Chatzos. So all of Yechaman Zakkai should have done is made the takana that Chodesh is also until Chatzos on the 16th. What is the scenario that conceivably Chodesh could remain Osir until later in the day, until past Chatzos, such that he had to make a takana that it will apply the entire day of the 16th? So the answer is Loit Sricha. The answer is the case where it was needed is the Boni Belelia. Let's say the Bais Mikdash is built at night, Inami Somoch L'Shkia Sachama, or not at night but close to Shtia. The point being, in other words, that the concern, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's concern, was what if the Bais Mikdash is rebuilt at night? Now then, usually the harvesting of the Omer takes place on the night going into the 16th of Nisan. And then the next morning, then overnight, they prepare it. And the next morning already, they're ready to bring it. And as we said, they make sure not to bring it any later than Chatzos. But suppose the Bais Mikdash is built at night. So then they're busy with that. So then they don't go to, since the Bais Mikdash was only built at night, then they only do the harvesting later in the night. It takes time to prepare the Korban Omer. There's a lot of, it has to be roasted, it has to be ground, et cetera, it has to be sifted, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, they're not going to have it, they may not have a chance to bring it before Chatzos. Or another possibility is not at night, but rather on the 15th, close to Shkia, which according to Rashi, it kind of amounts to the same thing. The Inami is not really a different answer. It's just two different possible scenarios within it. Now Rashi point, Tosfos actually explains differently. We're not talking about the night, we're not talking about Somuch L'Shkia Sachama on the 15th, we're talking Somuch L'Shkia Sachama on the 14th, on Erev Pesach. But the point is, nevertheless, they're not going to be able to find on Yom Tov. They have to they have to find where there's a stand of barley fairly close to Yerushalayim that to be able to harvest for the Omer. They're not going to be able to go on Yom Tov itself to do it. You can't travel more than a certain distance on Yom Tov. They also are going to need to find the equipment and so forth that they need for the Omer. So there are two answers. One is that the business, according to Tosfos, then there are two different answers. One is it might be built by night after the 15th, going into the 16th. The other is it might be built close to Shkia Sachama on the 14th. Either of those scenarios, then the bringing of the Korban Omer on the 16th might be delayed well past Chatzos, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai had to consider that possibility, and therefore he made Chodosh Osir the entire day. Now, both Rashi and Tosfos bring up a point that the halacha is you're not allowed to build the Beis Mikdash by night. So what are we saying? It might be, for that matter, you're not allowed to build it on Yom Tov. So what do we mean it might be built by night? Or what do we mean it might be built on, what do we mean it might be built Somuch L'Shkia Sachama on the 15th, according to Rashi? So the answer is Rashi and Tosfos both mention that this rule about not building the Beis Mikdash at night only applies to a Beis Mikdash built by human hands. The Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, Shibonu Meher Yamenu, is going to come down ready-made from Shemayim. Therefore, those rules don't apply to it, and that could happen by night, and it could happen on Yom Kippur. That's according to Rashi and Tosfos. Now, on the other hand, the Rambam learns that Moshiach is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. We know that the Rambam, among his criteria for Moshiach, says Bonam Mikdash B'Mekoymer, that he's going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash in its place. So according to the Rambam, we would have to say, the Me'iri explains that we have to be concerned about a Beis Din Toyin. What might happen is, when Mashiach comes, the Beis Din of that time is going to make a mistake. They're going to be so eager to build the Beis Mikdash that they're going to forget the halacha that it has to be done, that it can't be done by night, and that it can't be done on Yom Tov, and they may go and do it then. There are a couple of the Aruch HaNer brings a couple of other possibilities with that. One is, he says, maybe indeed the Mizbeach could be built by night. Maybe only the structure of the Beis Mikdash can't be built by night, but the Mizbeach is considered a keli. Or maybe the din that you're not allowed to build the Beis Mikdash on Shabbos. And from that, we learn to Yom Tov. Maybe when the Me'iri talks about a Beis Din Toyin, what he means is they're going to make a mistake and not realizing that Yom Tov is like Shabbos in that regard. After all, there are certain malachas similar to Boina that you are allowed to do on Yom Tov. At least Daraisa. So therefore, they may make a mistake and think that the actual building of the Beis Mikdash is in that category as well. Whatever the case, so those are the scenarios over here. Also, by the way, the Aruch HaNer brings from a Medrash that really what it is when we say, so we talk about who's going to build the Beis Mikdash. Is it going to come down from Shemayim, or is it going to be built by Mashiach and his crew? The answer is both. The physical structure of the Beis Mikdash is going to be built by Mashiach, and then there's going to come down the Beis Mikdash HaShlishi Min HaShemayim, like a neshama into it. There's also the famous answer, which the Rebbe brought a number of times in Sichas, that the structure of the Beis Mikdash will come down Min HaShemayim, and then Mashiach and we Jewish people will put up the gates that sank into the ground at the time of the Churban, Tovu Ba'aretz Sha'areha, and we'll put those up, and that'll be considered that we did the building. Anyway, the point is that is why Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai made this takana, because you have that possibility that the Beis Mikdash might be built, that the timing of the building of the Beis Mikdash might be such that the Korban Omer is going to be delayed on the 16th. However, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, b'shitas Rabbi Yehuda Omer. No, actually, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Minatora Hu Osir, who said, now, up until now, we've been saying that Midoraisa, if there's no Korban Omer, then the Chodesh is mutter on the entire, is mutter as soon as it becomes light on the 16th of Nisan. No, Rabbi Yehuda says that actually Midoraisa, when there's no Omer, it's also the entire day. Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, The pasuk says you shouldn't eat chodosh ad etzem hayom hazeh, until this very day. Now, in other words, you have like, the pasuk has two things. It says ad etzem hayom hazeh, and then it continues ad haviyachem as korban al kechem, until you bring the korban. So we understand that there are two times when chodosh is mutter. When there's a korban, then it becomes mutter when the korban is brought. When there's no korban, then it becomes mutter. Then it's also until etzem hayom hazeh. Now, until now, we've been talking according to the Chachamim, who say etzem hayom hazeh means until the day begins, meaning once the day of the 16th begins, then it's mutter. Rabbi Yehuda says no. It means until and including that day, it remains aser. V'chasavar ad v'ad v'chlal. He holds that when the pasuk is saying ad etzem hayom hazeh, means including this very day. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, d'oraisa, the 16th, the whole 16th, you're not allowed to eat the Omer, you're not allowed to eat Chodesh when there's no Korban Omer. When there's a Korban Omer, sure, Ad Aviyachem is Korban al Keichem, you bring your Korban, and then it becomes Mutter. But until then, not. So therefore, said Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai holds like that. And therefore he announced that you're not allowed to eat Chodesh the entire 16th. So the Gemara says, Mi Savar Leih Kama Seh? What do you mean? Does Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai agree with Rabbi Yehuda? V'ham Miflag Poli Gilavei. What do you mean? We find that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai on that. The Tanya, or it's not really, it's a Mishnah in the whole thing that we're going to quote is a Mishnah in Menachos actually. So Mishachora Besmekesh, after the Besmekesh was destroyed, Hiskin Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai sheyehem henef kulay aser. Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai made a takana that the entire yom henef should be aser. Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says to him. Now we don't mean to him directly to Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai. Rabbi Yehuda lived long after Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai. What we mean really is that Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai said regarding what Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai had said. He said to the chacham of his times, I don't understand. What do you mean, Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai made a takana, meaning that it's drabbanon, that you're not allowed to. What do you mean that it's drabbanon that you're not allowed to eat chodosh the entire 16th? It's actually daraisa. Rabbi Yehuda says v'aloi minatorda who also. After all, it's already also minatorda. That's a name is there. Adik sumay shoyon. So we see, in other words, on the face of it, that Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai and Rabbi Yehuda are disagreeing. Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai held it's only also drabbanon, and he made a takana to that effect. And Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's daraisa. So what are you telling me? So what are you telling me that Rabbi Nachman? What are you telling me then, Rabbi Nachman by Yitzchak, that Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai agrees with Rabbi Yehuda? The answer is Rabbi Yehuda who dekatoy. What happened was Rabbi Yehuda made a mistake. He misunderstood what Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai did. Who saw him as Rabbanon farmer? He thought when we say that Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai made a takona, he thought it meant that Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai made a takona de Rabbanon. That's not actually so. Midaraisa farmer. No, what it means is Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai announced that this is the din daraisa, and therefore, so we agree with Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, "Vaha hiskin kama." What do you mean? He used the Mishnah uses the expression hiskin. Then he made a takona, which is de Rabbanon. The answer is it means dorash v'hiskin. Doesn't mean he made a takana derabanan. Means he darshan, he explained the pasuk to the people, and based on that, said that this is the takana that has to be done. So in other words, yes, according to Rabbi Yechon Yitzchok, Rabbi Yechon and Ben Zakkai, not like we said on Amud Aleph that the din is derabanan in case the Beis Hamikdash is built late in the day. Or at night or whatever, and therefore they don't have the time to bring the Omer at night. No, Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying, midaraisa, when there's no Korban Omer, Chodesh is also the entire 16th, and Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai was following that. So what happens is, after the Korban, he analyzes the Pesukim, realizes that this is the din, that when there's no Beis Hamikdash Shlamim, then the Chodesh is also the entire day, and therefore he makes an announcement, everyone should know that now the situation has changed, that now, from now on, you should know Chodesh is going to be also the entire 16th, Daraisa. Okay, so that's that. So there's two ways of understanding it. One is that it's a takana de Rabbanon. The other one is that he's informing them of changed circumstances that cause a change in the din Daraisa. Okay. So now, So now we said in the previous Mishnah that when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, then you took lulav in the Beis Mikdash, and according to the Rambam, in the whole Yerushalayim for 7 days, and everywhere else you took it only for 1 day. Now, at that time, when that din existed, then you would take lulav on Sukkos, on the first day of Sukkos, outside the Beis Mikdash, even when it was on Shabbos. So let's talk about the dinim regarding that. The Mishnah says, Yom Tov Rishon Shachag Shachal Yis B'Shabbos, when the first day Sukkos comes out on Shabbos, Kol Ha'omay Luchanes L'Lavim L'Veis HaKnesses, everybody brings their yom, their L'Lavim to Shul before Shabbos, because obviously they can't carry it on Shabbos. So again, in the next parak, the Gemara is going to explain that this no longer exists nowadays. Nowadays, as we all know, you don't take lulav on Shabbos, and we'll explain in the Gemara there the reason why, Gzeira D'Rabba. But right now, we're talking about when the Beis Mikdash was standing, where you only took lulav outside the Beis Mikdash for one, or outside Yerushalayim, for 1 day, and they on the, for the first day, and therefore, if that first day came out on Shabbos, you would still do it. So you bring your lulav and esrog to shul before Shabbos. The next day they would come early to shul, and every person recognizes his own lulav and takes it. The point is, he doesn't take somebody else's lulav, because if he did, it wouldn't work. Because the Chacham explained, on the first day Sukkos, a person cannot be yotze with somebody else's lulav because it's not lochem. And it says, "Omakachtem lachem by immersion." Ushayim is a chag. Onam yotzi dechivasi, but lo leshachaveri. Whereas the rest of the days of Sukkos, a person can. Again, like we said before, in Chutz Laaretz, where we have 2 days for Sfeika Diyam, and then that rule applies on the second day as well to be on the safe side. But it doesn't apply to the rest. It doesn't apply to the days of Chol Hamoed. Those you could borrow somebody else's lulav. Next, continues the Mishnah, Rav Yosef, Yom Tov Rishon Shachag Shachal Yis B'Shabbos, if the first day Yom Tov comes out on Shabbos, and again, we're talking about in a time when they took lulav on Shabbos as well. So we said you're supposed to bring your lulav to shul before Shabbos, but the Shachach, the Hotzias of lulav L'Rishos HaRabim, if a person forgets that it's Shabbos and carries out the lulav into Rishos HaRabim, Potter, then Rabbi Yossi says he would be Potter from Achatos, because he took it out with permission, meaning permission of the mitzvah. In other words, he has the right to pick up this lulav in order to do the mitzvah. So now he's thinking about it and hurrying up to do the mitzvah, and he forgot, therefore, that it's Shabbos. So Rabbi Yossi holds that if a person makes it, that if a person does that while they're trying to do a mitzvah, they forget and do something which would normally make them chayav achatos, then in fact, in this case, they're potter. So now, again, that wouldn't apply nowadays. But for example, the Gemara mentions this in Masechta Shabbos in connection with, let's say, a person has to do a bris, and where a moyel has a bris to do, and by mistake he does a bris that was supposed to be done on a different day on Shabbos. So we have a similar thing. It's called tar b'dvar mitzvah. And then Rabbi Yossi is saying over here that would make him potter from chatos. So the most thoughts of. So we're going to discuss that. We're going to discuss that point of Tov B'Dvar Mitzvah in the Gemara tomorrow. That's the channel. The Gemara starts off. Menahani Mili, how do we know that a person cannot be Yotze with somebody else's lulav on the first day? The Tana Rabbanan, the Pasuk says, Olakachtem. The Pasuk says, you should take lulav and esrog in plural. So that means, So the plural means shetei lakicha b'yad kol echad b'echad, means every person individually has to take lulav. In other words, Tosfos says, because otherwise it would have said lakachta, that you singular should take. The fact that it says lakach, then it would mean that one person could take and be motzi many other people. The fact that it says lakachtem means that every person has to take their own. Now, of course, there are a lot of other mitzvahs where that's the case, and it doesn't say lakachtem by them. One person can't put on tefillin for somebody else, for example. But the difference is that, among others, that first of all, lulav and esrog are meant to represent the achdus of the Jewish people, and they're also connected with the korbanos of Sukkos in the psukim. So therefore, you would think when it comes to the korbanos of Sukkos, the korbanos musaf, you have one kohen or one group of kohen and brings it on behalf of the whole Jewish people. Maybe it would work like that by lulav and esrog as well. And therefore, the Gemara has to tell us that no, the word of lakachtem tells us that every person individually has to take lulav and esrog. That's the Meiri explains that. Actually, he gives a different. He says that that lulav is that one purpose of lulav is to ask Hashem for plentiful rain during the coming year, because as we said earlier in the parak, all the dalad minim need a lot of water to grow. So maybe it would be enough that Beis Din would take lulav and esrog on behalf of everybody else, and therefore the Gemara is telling us that. Next, the Braisa continues when it says lochem, when it says rokachta lochem, means mishalochem, means it has to be yours. That's a guzzle. So as opposed to one that was bought, one as opposed to one that was borrowed, or one that was stolen. We can omer chachamim. Based on this, the chachamim explain: Ein adam yotzi de chivasa v'yom tov rishon shachag v'lulavi shachamer. A person cannot be yotze the first day of yom tov with somebody else's lulav. Elim kein nosne leiv matana, unless he gives it to him as a present. It happened once that these four chachamim were traveling on a ship when it came to Sukkos. The only one of them who had a lulav and esrog was Rav Gamliel. He had bought it for 1,000 zuz. The Gemara is going to explain soon why it needs to mention the point that he bought it for 1,000 zuz. So what they do, not like Rav Gamliel v'yotzevay, Rav Gamliel first took on the first day of Yom Tov, took the lulav and esrog and was yotzev with it. V'nosnil Rav Yeshua v'matana, then he gave it to Rav Yeshua as a present. Not like Rav Yeshua v'yotzevay, then he took it and was yotzev with it. V'nosnil Rav Elazar ben Azariah v'matana, and he gives it to Rav Elazar ben Azariah as a present. Not like Rav Elazar ben Azariah v'yotzevay, v'nosnil matana, Rav Akiva. And then not like Rav Akiva v'yotzevay, v'achziru Rav Gamliel. Then Rav Akiva, after he finished taking it, gave it as a present back to Rav Gamliel, and that way everybody was able to be yotz. So we see that it works. So we see that it works to give it to the other person as a present, but not to lend it. There is a sicha where the Rebbe talks about why do we need to know the names of the four chachamim? Wouldn't it have been enough to say that just there were a bunch of chachamim on a boat and each one gave it to the next one? The Rebbe explains because with that we want to explain the order why he gave it. On the face of it, Rebbe Gamliel, fine, we understand he's the owner of the lulav, so he goes first. But after that, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah is a kohen, Rebbe Yeshua is a levi. Shouldn't he be giving it to Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah first? And the answer is no, because Rebbe Yeshua was a much greater talmid chacham. He was actually much older and from a previous generation as Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. So therefore, he did it in that order. First Rabbi Yeshua, then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and then Rabbi Akiva was last. This that they were on a ship, Sukkos time, by the way, historically, one of the Roman emperors, who was a tremendous anti-Semite named Domitian, was assassinated shortly before Sukkos one year, and then the Chachamim apparently wanted to get to Rome as fast as possible to be able to talk to his successor, who actually ended up to be a much nicer guy. So that would explain why all of a sudden they're on a ship there without much time to prepare, and the only one who had a chance to get a lulav and esrog ahead of time was Rav Gamliel. Anyway, the Gemara says, "Lomeli the meimer hechziroi." Why does the Braisa need to mention that Rabbi Akiva returned the lulav and esrog to Rav Gamliel? It should be enough to say that Rabbi Akiva took it and was yotze with it. Why bother mentioning the fact that he returned it to Rav Gamliel? Rav Gamliel had already been yotze. The answer is milsa aga buche kamash milon. The Braisa wants to tell us something. By the way, you should know matona amanas lasis shma matona. Giving a present on condition that the other person returns it is considered a valid way of giving a present. And in this case, so therefore, when Rav Gamliel gave it to Rabbi Yeshua, and when Rabbi Yeshua gave it to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, well, when Rav Gamliel originally gave it, it was a matana manas lahasir. And therefore, at the end of the chain, Rabbi Akiva has to return it to Rav Gamliel. Otherwise, the tnai has not been fulfilled, and therefore, nobody will have been yotze. So therefore, we had to return it. The fact that he didn't return it directly, fine. That's Tosfos explains that was part of the tnai. It doesn't mean that each one has to directly return it to Rav Gamliel afterwards. It's enough that it goes around the chain, and then at the end, it can return to the original person. But it does have to be that way. So, okay. So the Gemara says, "Ki hod amar Rava." This is like what Rava says. If a person says to somebody else, "Heilacha esrog zeh, al menas shetachzireli," if one person says to the other, "Here's this esrog as a gift on condition that you return it to me, not levi yotzeboy," and he takes it and is yotze with it, "vechziroy," then only if he returns it to him, yotze, only then is he yotze. Lo yachziro, lo yotze. If he doesn't return it, then he's not yotze. And in fact, there is a discussion among the poskim: what happens if he returns it? What happens if he returns it broken? What happens if he what happens? Are there cases where maybe he's yotze even if he doesn't return the original esrog, if he only returns the value? But there's a good deal of discussion, pro and con, about all those din. Tosfos points out in that regard, therefore, an esrog that belongs to partners is not going to work either, because each one would have to be. It would only work if each one is makne his portion to the other one when he uses it. Back in the old country, it was very common. They didn't usually have esrogim and lulavim for every person individually. It was very common that the kahila would buy a lulav and esrog and everybody would be yotze with it. In our times, we had everybody used the Rebbe's lulav and esrog, but I mean, they'd made the bracha on their own lulav and esrog at home. But the one of the kahal, so there you get into this issue of an esrog that belongs to partners. So the post can discuss the pros and cons of it. One idea is, to begin with, they buy it with the tenai that every person, when they use it, we're going to be machne it completely to them. So therefore, that can work. Tosfos also discusses over here the question. Usually, when you do something with a tenai, you have several rules of tenayim that are involved. You have to have it has to be a double tenai. For example, you would have to say, if you return this to me, then it's a matana, and if not, then it's not a matana. And you have to put the statement first, and then the condition. This is a present if you return it to me afterwards. This is not a present if you don't return it to me afterwards. Do we need all these rules over here? Tosfos says yes, and the Gemara is just making it brief, because we're not talking about the dinim of tznoyim over here. We just want to focus on matana amanas lahatsu. Other rishonim learn that no, you don't necessarily need all the rules of tznoyim in this case. The Rambam anyway writes that when a person says amanas, then it's like you say me'achshav, and therefore you don't necessarily need all the rules. Anyway, so if the person returns it, then he's yotze. And if not, then he's not yotze. That kind of thing, the Gemara in Bava Basra discusses this point of matana amanas lahachzir. In other contexts, it's called kinyan peiros. It's called that the person only has the use of the thing as far as its peiros, as far as what benefit he could get from it, not kinyan aguf. He doesn't own the actual object itself. So we're saying, nevertheless, that's considered a valid matana. So the Braisa needed to tell us that Rabbi Akiva eventually returned the lulav to Rabbi Gamliel. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So the Gemara says, "Lomeli lameimar lochav elav zuz." Why does the Braisa need to mention the point that Rabbi Gamliel bought the lulav for 1,000 zuz? The reason is lohidiach kama mitzvahs chavivas alehim. It comes to show you how precious mitzvahs were for them that Rabbi Gamliel was ready to spend a huge amount of money on the mitzvah. Since we're talking about the preciousness of the mitzvah, so the Gemara mentions another point. Amalei Mar Bar Ameimer tells Rav Ashi, you should know that my father, Ameimer, who was one of Rav Ashi's Rebbeim, used to daven Shemen Esrei while he was holding his lulav and esrog, out of chavivus, out of affection for the mitzvah. Telling says, what do you mean? Maybe we learn in a brisa, lo yoichas adam tefillin biyodei. A person should not, while he's davening shemana esrei, hold tefillin in his hand, but sefer Torah b'cheikoi, or sefer Torah in his bosom, the yispalo, and daven, because then he's distracted that he might drop the tefillin of the sefer Torah, and he's not going to daven properly. V'lo yashkin mehem ma'im. He's also not, while he's holding tefillin of a sefer Torah, he's not allowed to urinate. V'lo yishan mehem. He shouldn't sleep with them while he's holding them. Rashi points out earlier in the second parak, we talked about that you're allowed to take a brief nap while wearing tefillin, as long as it was less than 100 amos walk, etc. But here we're talking about when you're holding the tefillin, where there's a concern that you might drop it. So you're not allowed to sleep with them. Lo shenes kevav, lo shenes arai, not a full sleep and not even a nap, because you might drop them. The Omer Shmuel, and Shmuel said, it's not just that tefillin and sefer Torah, where you have a concern about bizoyin of them, but also sakin. Also, the same rule applies to a knife, where you're afraid that you might drop it and then that you might drop it on your foot and injure yourself. So that's the same thing. But ka'ara and a plate full of food, same idea. You're going to be distracted and afraid that you're going to drop it. Kikar, a loaf of bread, for the same reason. Umois and money, harei l'kayetzbehem. Those are the same thing, and you can't hold those while you're davening Shemoneh Esrei either. So how is a Meimar holding his lulav and Esrei during Shemoneh Esrei? So the answer is hasam. The answer is hasam lav mitzvah in your Torah. The answer is because holding any of those other things is not a mitzvah. So therefore he's distracted by it. He's not accomplishing a mitzvah at the time. Therefore, he's focused too much on that and not enough on that. Hacham mitzvah nehu. Here to hold the lulav and esrog is a mitzvah, and the mitzvah is precious to him. Therefore, for like tarid bahu. Therefore, he's not distracted by it. It's not going to distract him from thinking about what about his audience with Hashem during Shemoneh Esrei. Actually, the Ritva says, I mean, in that case, if it's a mitzvah, isn't there more reason he's going to be distracted? So he explains what it means is because the mitzvah of the day, therefore, just the opposite. It may help him be more mechaven in his davening, realizing that at the same time he's accomplishing a mitzvah. And the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Lozab at Sadakoymer, Kachoy min Hogan shall answer Yerushalayim. This was the minig of the people of Yerushalayim. Adam Yotz min Beisev Lulav Abiyadim. When a person left his house in the morning, he'd be carrying his lulav in his hand. When he went to shul, he'd be carrying his lulav. He'd be saying Krishma, he'd be saying Shemoneh Esrei, still holding his lulav. So we see like a Meimah, he'd be holding the lulav while he's saying Shemoneh Esrei. But when he gets an aliyah, when he gets an aliyah on the Torah, to the Torah, and then he needs to put down the lulav because he needs to open up the Sefer Torah, the Rav Yoh points out another thing also. You have to hold on to the Atzei Chaim. So then there's no choice. Also, noises kappa, but also if he's a koyin and he's dochening, and again, he can't be holding the lulav while he's dochening, then banichei agave kavka, so then he puts it down on the ground temporarily and picks it up afterwards. Holach levaka cholim ulanachem avedim, if he's going during Sukkos to be menachem avol, or to visit a sick person, or to be menachem avol. Menachem Oval, by the way, is an interesting point because how is a person sitting Shiva during Sukkos? Anybody who was sitting Shiva before Sukkos, then their Shiva is canceled by Sukkos. And anybody whose relative passed away during Sukkos is not sitting Shiva until after Yom Tov. Nevertheless, there's a certain Nichum Avelim that you want to say to the person just to make them feel better, even though they're not in actual technical Avelos yet. Nevertheless, you want to say something to them to make them feel better. So he would do that. Also, the lulav biyadei, then he would have his lulav in his hand to show the preciousness of the mitzvah. Nichnas leveis medrash, when the person goes into the beis medrash, and he can't be holding the lulav while he's learning because he may get so fatifed in his learning that he drops the lulav. So then, mashagel lulav biyad no biyad avne biyad shlochay. So then he would send the lulav home with his son or his slave or his messenger. So, but as much as possible, they would be holding the lulav. As much as possible, they'd be holding the lulav throughout the day. So the Gemara says, "My Kamash Malan." So, what does Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik want to inform us with this whole detailed description? He wants to inform you. He wants to inform you how diligent they were with mitzvahs, how precious mitzvahs were to them, that they would be holding the lulav and esrog as much as possible, rather than only when they absolutely needed to would they put it down. So the same way, a Meimah was holding it during Shemoneh Esrei. So that's actually the halacha. Really, the halacha is you're not allowed to hold during Shemoneh Esrei anything which you're afraid you might drop. So it means not only the six things we mentioned in the Gemara, but other things as well. Although it does say in Shulchan Aruch you're allowed to hold a siddur because that's a normal thing to hold during Shemoneh Esrei. But other than that, we're saying the only other thing you can hold is something like this, lulav and esrog, because it's precious to you. Although in practice, we don't usually do that during Shemoneh Esrei. Okay. Shabbat shalom, everyone.